34. The sidewalks were haunted by dust ghosts all night, as the furnace wind summoned them up, swung them about, and gentled them down in a warm spice on the lawns. Trees, shaken by the footsteps of late-night strollers, sifted avalanches of dust. From midnight on, it seemed a volcano beyond the town was showering red-hot ashes everywhere, crusting slumberless night watchmen and irritable dogs. Each house was a yellow attic, smoldering with spontaneous combustion at 3 in the morning. Dawn, then, was a time where things changed element for element. Air ran like hot spring waters nowhere, with no sound. The lake was a quantity of steam, very still and deep, over valleys of fish and sand held baking under its serene vapors. Tar was poured licorice in the streets. Red bricks were brass and gold. Rooftops were paved with bronze. The high-tension wires were lightning held forever, blazing, a threat above the unslept houses. The cicadas sang louder and yet louder. The sun did not rise, it overflowed. In his room, his face a bubbled mass of perspiration, Douglas melted on his bed. "Wow," said Tom, entering. "Come on, Doug, we'll drown in the river all day." Douglas breathed out. Douglas breathed in. Sweat trickled down his neck. "Doug, you awake?" The slightest nod of the head. "You don't feel good, huh? Boy, this house'll burn down today." He put his hand on Douglas's brow. It was like touching a blazing stove lid. He pulled his fingers away, startled. He turned and went downstairs. "Mom," he said, "Doug's really sick." His mother, taking eggs out of the icebox, stopped, let a quick look of concern cross her face, put the eggs back, and followed Tom upstairs. Douglas had not moved so much as a finger. The cicadas were screaming now. At noon, running as if the sun were after him to smash him to the ground, the doctor pulled up on the front porch, gasping, his eyes weary already, and gave his bag to Tom. At 1 o'clock, the doctor came out of the house, shaking his head. Tom and his mother stood behind the screen door as the doctor talked in a low voice, saying over and over again he didn't know, he didn't know. He put his Panama hat on his head, gazed at the sunlight blistering and shriveling the trees overhead, hesitated like a man plunging into the outer rim of hell, and ran again for his car. The exhaust of the car left a great pall of blue smoke in the pulsing air for 5 minutes after he was gone. Tom took the ice pick in the kitchen and chipped a pound of ice into prisms, which he carried upstairs. Mother was sitting on the bed, and the only sound in the room was Douglas breathing in steam and breathing out fire. They put the ice in handkerchiefs on his face and along his body. They drew the shades and made the room like a cave. They sat there until 2 o'clock, bringing up more ice. Then they touched Douglas's brow again, and it was like a lamp that had burned all night. After touching him, you looked at your fingers to make sure they weren't seared to the bone. Mother opened her mouth to say something, but the cicadas were so loud now they shook dust down from the ceiling. Inside redness, inside blindness, Douglas lay listening to the dim piston of his heart and the muddy ebb and flow of the blood in his arms and legs. His lips were heavy and would not move. His thoughts were heavy and barely ticked like seed pellets falling in an hourglass slow, one by falling one. Tick. Around a bright steel corner of rail a trolley swung, throwing a crumbling wave of sizzling sparks, its clamorous bell knocking 10,000 times until it blended with the cicadas. Mr. Tridden waved. The trolley stormed around a corner like a cannonade and dissolved. Mr. Tridden. Tick. A pellet fell. Tick. Chug-a-chug-ding, woo-woo! On the rooftop a boy locomoted, pulling an invisible whistle string, then froze into a statue. "John! John Huff, you!" Hate you, John. John, we're pals. Don't hate you. No. John fell down the elm tree corridor, like someone falling down an endless summer well, dwindling away. Tick. John Huff. Tick. Sand pellet dropping. Tick. John. Douglas moved his head flat over, crashing on the white, white, terribly white pillow. The ladies in the green machine sailed by in a sound of black seal barking, lifting hands as white as doves. They sank into the lawn's deep waters, their gloves still waving to him as the grass closed over. Miss Fern, Miss Roberta. Tick, tick. And quickly then from a window across the way, Colonel Freely leaned out with the face of a clock, and buffalo dust sprang up in the street. Colonel Freely spanged and rattled. His jaw fell open. A mainspring shot out and dangled on the air instead of his tongue. He collapsed like a puppet on the sill, one arm still waving. Mr. Uffman rode by in something that was bright and something like the trolley and the green electric runabout, and it trailed glorious clouds, and it put out your eyes like the sun. "Mr. Uffman, did you invent it?" he cried. "Did you finally build the happiness machine?" But then he saw there was no bottom to the machine. Mr. Uffman ran along the ground, carrying the whole incredible frame from his shoulders. "Happiness, Doug! Here goes happiness!" And he went the way of the trolley, John Huff, and the dove-fingered ladies. Above, on the roof, a tapping sound. Tap, rap, bang. Pause. Tap, rap, bang. Nail and hammer, hammer and nail. A bird choir. And an old woman singing in a frail but hearty voice. "Yes, we'll gather at the river, river, river. Yes, we'll gather at the river that flows by the throne of God. Grandma, great-grandma." Tap softly, tap, tap softly, tap. River, river. And now it was only the birds picking up their tiny feet and putting them down again on the roof. Rattle, rattle, scratch, peep, peep, soft, soft, river. Douglas took one breath and let it all out at once, wailing. He did not hear his mother run into the room. A fly, like the burning ash of a cigarette, fell upon his senseless hand, sizzled, and flew away. 4 o'clock in the afternoon, flies dead on the pavement. Dogs, wet mops in their kennels, shadows herded under trees, downtown stores shut up and locked, the lake shore empty, the lake full of thousands of people up to their necks in the warm but soothing water. 4:15, along the brick streets of town, the junk wagon moved, and Mr. Jonas singing on it. Tom, driven out of the house by the scorched look on Douglas's face, walked slowly down to the curb as the wagon stopped. "Hi, Mr. Jonas."
"Hello, Tom."
Tom and Mr. Jonas were alone on the street, with all that beautiful junk in the wagon to look at, and neither of them looking at it. Mr. Jonas didn't say anything right away. He lit his pipe and puffed it, nodding his head as if he knew before he asked that something was wrong.
"Tom," he said.
"It's my brother," said Tom. "It's Doug." Mr. Jonas looked up at the house. "He's sick," said Tom. "He's dying."
"Oh, now that can't be so," said Mr. Jonas, scowling around at the very real world where nothing that vaguely looked like death could be found on this quiet day.
"He's dying," said Tom. "And the doctor doesn't know what's wrong. The heat," he said. "Nothing but the heat." "Can that be, Mr. Jonas? Can the heat kill people, even in a dark room?"
"Well," said Mr. Jonas, and stopped. For Tom was crying now. I always thought I hated him. That's what I thought. We fight half the time. I guess I did hate him, sometimes. But now... Oh, Mr. Jonas, if only...
If only what, boy?
If only you had something in this wagon would help. Something I could pick and take upstairs and make him okay.
Tom cried again. Mr. Jonas took out his red bandana handkerchief and handed it to Tom. Tom wiped his nose and eyes with the handkerchief.
It's been a tough summer, Tom said. Lots of things have happened to Doug.
Tell me about them, said the junk man.
Well, said Tom, gasping for breath, not quite done crying yet. He lost his best Aggie for one, a real beaut. And on top of that, somebody stole his catcher's mitt. It cost $1.95.
Then there was the bad trade he made of his fossil stones and shell collection with Charlie Woodman for a Tarzan clay statue you got by saving up macaroni box tops. Dropped the Tarzan statue on the sidewalk, second day he had it.
That's a shame, said the junk man, and really saw all the pieces on the cement.
Then he didn't get the book of magic tricks he wanted for his birthday. Got a pair of pants and a shirt instead. That's enough to ruin the summer right there.
Parents sometimes forget how it is, said Mr. Jonas.
Sure, Tom continued in a low voice. Then Doug's genuine set of Tower of London manacles got left out all night and rusted. And worst of all, I grew 1 inch taller, catching up with him almost.
Is that all? Asked the junk man quietly.
I could think of 10 dozen other things, all as bad or worse. Some summers you get a run of luck like that. It's been Silverfish getting in his comics collections or mildew in his new tennis shoes ever since Doug got out of school.
I remember years like that, said the junk man.
He looked off at the sky, and there were all the years.
So there you are, Mr. Jonas. That's it. That's why he's dying.
Tom stopped and looked away.
Let me think, said Mr. Jonas.
Can you help, Mr. Jonas? Can you?
Mr. Jonas looked deep in the big old wagon and shook his head. Now, in the sunlight, his face looked tired, and he was beginning to perspire. Then he peered into mounds of vases and peeling lampshades and marble nymphs and satyrs made of green copper. He sighed. He turned and picked up the reins and gave them a gentle shake.
Tom, he said, looking at the horse's back, I'll see you later. I got to plan. I got to look around and come again after supper. Even then, who knows? Until then...
He reached down and picked up a little set of Japanese wind crystals. Hang these in his upstairs window. They make a nice, cool music. Tom stood with the wind crystals in his hands as the wagon rolled away. He held them up, and there was no wind. They did not move. They could not make a sound. 7 o'clock. The town resembled a vast hearth, over which the shudderings of heat moved again and again from the west. Charcoal-colored shadows quivered outward from every house, every tree. A red-haired man moved along below. Tom, seeing him illumined by the dying but ferocious sun, saw a torch proudly carrying itself, saw a fiery fox, saw the devil marching in his own country. At 7:30, Mrs. Spaulding came out of the back door of the house to empty some watermelon rinds into the garbage pail and saw Mr. Jonas standing there.
"How is the boy?" said Mr. Jonas.
Mrs. Spaulding stood there for a moment, a response trembling on her lips.
"May I see him, please?" said Mr. Jonas.
Still she could say nothing.
"I know the boy well," he said. "Seen him most every day of his life since he was out and around. I've something for him in the wagon."
"He's not," she was going to say, "conscious," but she said, "awake.
He's not awake, Mr. Jonas. The doctor said he's not to be disturbed. Oh, we don't know what's wrong.
Even if he's not awake, said Mr. Jonas, I'd like to talk to him. Sometimes the things you hear in your sleep are more important. You listen better. It gets through.
I'm sorry, Mr. Jonas. I just can't take the chance. Mrs. Spaulding caught hold of the screen door handle and held fast to it.
Thanks. Thank you, anyway, for coming by.
Yes, ma'am, said Mr. Jonas. He did not move. He stood looking up at the window above. Mrs. Spaulding went in the house and shut the screen door. Upstairs on his bed, Douglas breathed. It was a sound like a sharp knife going in and out of a sheath. At 8 o'clock, the doctor came and went again, shaking his head, his coat off, his tie untied, looking as if he had lost 30 pounds that day. At 9 o'clock, Tom and mother and father carried a cot outside and brought Douglas down to sleep in the yard under the apple tree, where, if there might be a wind, it would find him sooner than in the terrible rooms above. Then they went back and forth until 11 o'clock, when they set the alarm clock to wake them at 3 and chip more ice to refill the packs. The house was dark and still at last, and they slept. At 12:35, Douglas's eyes flinched. The moon had begun to rise, and far away a voice began to sing. It was a high, sad voice, rising and falling. It was a clear voice, and it was in tune. You could not make out the words. The moon came over the edge of the lake and looked upon Greentown, Illinois, and saw it all and showed it all, every house, every tree, every prehistoric remembering dog twitching in his simple dreams. And it seemed that the higher the moon, the nearer and louder and clearer the voice that was singing. And Douglas turned in his fever and sighed. Perhaps it was an hour before the moon spilled all its light upon the world, perhaps less. But the voice was nearer now, and a sound like the beating of a heart, which was really the motion of a horse's hooves on the brick streets, muffled by the hot, thick foliage of the trees. And there was another sound, like a door slowly opening or closing, squeaking, squealing softly from time to time, the sound of a wagon. And down the street, in the light of the risen moon, came the horse pulling the wagon, and the wagon riding the lean body of Mr. Jonas, easy and casual on the high seat. He wore his hat as if he were still out under the summer sun, and he moved his hands on occasion to ripple the reins like a flow of water on the air above the horse's back. Very slowly the wagon moved down the street, with Mr. Jonas singing, and in his sleep Douglas seemed for a moment to stop breathing and listen.
Air, air, who will buy this air? Air like water and air like ice. Buy it once, and you'll buy it twice. Here's the April air, here's an autumn breeze, here's papaya wind from the Antilles. Air, air, sweet pickled air, fair, rare, from everywhere, bottled and capped and scented with thyme, all that you want of air for a dime.
At the end of this, the wagon was at the curb, and someone stood in the yard, treading his shadow, carrying 2 beetle-green bottles which glittered like cat's eyes. Mr. Jonas looked at the cot there and called the boy's name once, twice, 3 times, softly. Mr. Jonas swayed in indecision, looked at the bottles he carried, made his decision, and moved forward stealthily to sit on the grass and look at this boy crushed down by the great weight of summer.
"Doug," he said, "you just lie quiet. You don't have to say anything or open your eyes. You don't even have to pretend to listen. But inside there I know you hear me, and it's old Jonas, your friend."
"Your friend," he repeated, and nodded. He reached up and picked an apple off the tree, turned it round, took a bite, chewed, and continued. "Some people turn sad awfully young," he said. "No special reason, it seems, but they seem almost to be born that way. They bruise easier, tire faster, cry quicker, remember longer, and, as I say, get sadder younger than anyone else in the world. I know, for I'm one of them." He took another bite of the apple and chewed it. "Well, now, where are we?" he asked. "A hot night, not a breath stirring in August," he answered himself. "Killing hot. And a long summer it's been, and too much happening, eh? Too much. And it's getting on toward 1 o'clock, and no sign of a wind or rain. And in a moment now I'm going to get up and go. But when I go, and remember this clearly, I will leave these 2 bottles here upon your bed. And when I've gone, I want you to wait a little while, and then slowly open your eyes and sit up and reach over and drink the contents of these bottles. Not with your mouth, no. Drink with your nose. Tilt the bottles, uncork them, and let what is in them go right down into your head. Read the labels first, of course. But here, let me read them for you." He lifted 1 bottle into the light. "Green dusk for dreaming brand pure northern air," he read. "Derived from the atmosphere of the white Arctic in the spring of 1900, and mixed with the wind from the upper Hudson Valley in the month of April 1910, and containing particles of dust seen shining in the sunset of one day in the meadows around Grinnell, Iowa, when a cool air rose to be captured from a lake and a little creek and a natural spring." "Now the small print," he said. He squinted. "Also containing molecules of vapor from menthol, lime, papaya, and watermelon, and all other water-smelling, cool-savored fruits and trees, like camphor, and herbs like wintergreen, and the breath of a rising wind from the De Plains River itself, guaranteed most refreshing and cool, to be taken on summer nights when the heat passes 90. He picked up the other bottle. "This one the same, save I've collected a wind from the Aran Isles and one from off Dublin Bay with salt on it and a strip of flannel fog from the coast of Iceland." He put the 2 bottles on the bed. "One last direction." He stood by the cot and leaned over and spoke quietly. "When you're drinking these, remember, it was bottled by a friend. The S.J. Jonas Bottling Company, Greentown, Illinois, August 1928. A vintage year, boy. A vintage year." A moment later there was the sound of rain slapping the back of the horse in the moonlight, and the rumble of the wagon down the street and away. After a moment Douglas's eyes twitched, and very slowly opened. "Mother," whispered Tom. "Dad! Doug! It's Doug! He's going to be well! I just went down to check, and come on!" Tom ran out of the house. His parents followed. Douglas was asleep as they approached. Tom motioned to his parents, smiling wildly. They bent over the cot. A single exhalation, a pause. A single exhalation, a pause, as the 3 bent there. Douglas's mouth was slightly open, and from his lips and from the thin vents of his nostrils, gently there rose a scent of cool night and cool water and cool white snow and cool green moss and cool moonlight on silver pebbles lying at the bottom of a quiet river,
and cool, clear water at the bottom of a small white stone well. It was like holding their heads down for a brief moment to the pulse of an apple-scented fountain flowing cool up into the air and washing their faces. They could not move for a long time. The next morning was a morning of no caterpillars. The world that had been full to bursting with tiny bundles of black and brown fur trundling on their way to green leaf and tremulous grass blade was suddenly empty. The sound that was no sound, the billion footfalls of the caterpillars stomping through their own universe, died. Tom, who said he could hear that sound, precious as it was, looked with wonder at a town where not a single bird's mouthful stirred. Two, the cicadas had ceased. Then, in the silence, a great sighing rustle began, and they knew then why the absence of caterpillar and abrupt silence of cicada. Summer rain. The rain began light, a touch. The rain increased and fell heavily. It played the sidewalks and roofs like great pianos. And upstairs Douglas, inside again, like a fall of snow in his bed, turned his head and opened his eyes to see the freshly falling sky and slowly, slowly twitch his fingers toward his yellow nickel pad and yellow Ticonderoga pencil.